So, Jeff,
Yes, Chris.
what'd you think about last week?
Well, I thought it was pretty good. I didn't know exactly what kind of response we'd get, but there were quite a number of people that listened to our podcast and the comments
Yeah, that was nice.
the comments we got on the blogs and on Twitter seemed to be fairly favorable. I didn't see any comments that were purely negative, so I guess that's a good thing.
Well, we didn't put anything on YouTube, so that helps.
Right. Right.
So yeah, feedback. Feedback's pretty nice.
Well, you're going to get it anytime you throw something out there. And we kind of talked last week about jumping off, and you got to take a stab at it, even if it's a stab in the dark. And when you do that, normally you get some sort of feedback. You get some sort of response from people about whether they liked it or they didn't like it.
Yeah. Everyone's got an opinion, right?
Oh, everyone has an opinion.
Butts and opinions. Everybody's got one.
That's right.
I think the actual phrase is a little more vulgar than that, but
right.
Perhaps we keep our fledgling podcast family friendly for now.
Right. Right. So when you get feedback on some sort of design job or some sort of, engineering project, what do you do with that, and what pieces of the feedback do you listen to, and what pieces do you throw out?
That's a good question. Well, the youngster in me says throw it all away.
Right, you're going to be the engineering maverick, and what you think is the way to go.
Yeah, and I'm actually not that alone in this. I have a famous co-conspirator on this one to base all my feelings off of.
How famous?
Pretty famous.
Okay, who is it?
It's you might have heard of him,
right?
Steve Wozniak.
Yeah, I think I've heard of that guy.
Yeah. Little company called Apple Computers.
They're, not so little anymore.
No, they're in the news quite a bit these days. Apparently, if I were one to read newspapers, I would say, "Hey, there they are again."
And so what does Woz have to say about dealing with feedback?
Well, there's actually a book, an autobiography, about the Woz, as he goes. Steve Wozniak goes by Woz. And the book is called I Woz, Computer Geek to Cult Icon, How I Invented the Personal Computer, Co-Founded Apple, and Had Fun Doing It. And there was an article.
Wow, that's quite a subtitle.
Yeah, right. My subtitle would be like Chris Gammel. Well, now he has two podcasts.
Well, that's one more than I've got.
There you go. Something to shoot for, Jeff. A PhD and a second podcast.
Wow. That'd be pushing it.
So this showcasing of this book is on brainpickings.org, which is a great site as well. But I wanted to read the quote. "Most inventors and engineers I've met are like me. They're shy and they live in their heads. They're almost like artists. In fact, the very best of them are artists. And artists work best alone. Best outside of corporate environments. Best where they can control an invention's design without a lot of other people designing it or marketing it for some other committee. I don't believe anything really revolutionary has ever been invented by committee. I'm going to give you some advice that might be hard to take. That advice is, work alone, not on a committee, not on a team. And I'm going to add in here the extension of that, without any feedback, because that kind of is the, I think that's implicit in there. Not to put words in Wozniak's mouth, but...
Well, I guess if you're solving the right problem, I don't doubt an engineer's ability to get into a situation to make the right calculations, to figure things out if you're solving the right problem. But I know that on more than one occasion, I've come to a solution, and in retrospect, I'd solved the wrong problem.
Could you explain that a little more?
Well, just because it's happened fairly commonly in my my research that I'm working on right now, I'll come in and I will, you know, I'm doing feedback control type stuff. I'll solve a problem and go and discuss it with my advisor. And my advisor goes, "Why did you do that?" And I look at him and I go, "Well, it seemed like the obvious thing to do. Here were, without getting into the details, you know, here were the constraints that I had, that I felt that I was working under. Here's a solution that solves those." And he would go, "Yes, but if you would just abstract that out, you know, nobody cares about that. You know, just say it's a feedback controller. You don't have to explain every detail about the feedback controller." And so I think that feedback, you know, not all feedback should be weighed equally, but it's certainly valuable to get a somebody else's opinion and to consider that opinion. It just because it doesn't agree with yours doesn't mean that it's not a valid viewpoint on the work you're trying to complete.
So you were getting feedback on feedback work? Is that...
Yes, that's exactly it. Okay. That is correct.
Okay. Just wanted to clarify for myself and for our listeners.
All right. That's... Well, when you suggested the topic of feedback for this week, I was for a slight bit very excited because I thought we'd talk about, you know, state space controls or something like that.
Yes. Bode plots and planes and yada, yada, yada.
Oh. All good stuff.
Yes. That's enough to put anyone to sleep on radio or podcast.
Right. Well, so if you're going to listen to some feedback, I guess the question is, Waz is saying, don't listen to any of it because, you know, go with your heart, which is great if you're a billionaire and can afford to go with your heart.
Which he was not at the time, but.
Well, yes, but he was with a startup. It's not like he had a boss that you know, standing over his desk, pounding on it, saying, you know, I need an answer now.
That's true. And in reality, he didn't even have any customers in that case. I mean, he had customers in mind, but no actual customers yet.
Right. So in that case, he was sort of acting like an artist. He, you know, he could come up with something and throw it out there. That's a little different than a lot of engineering jobs where, you know, you're given a specific task and asked to deliver a design or a product or a report in a certain amount of time. And there's not a whole lot of flexibility in how you're going to do that.
And now, so he was able to start from scratch and do whatever, but now the reality of it is that's not most engineers. Maybe that's a co-founder or a right. A differently named role, a Wunderkind or a chief technical officer, whatever you want to call Wozniak when he was working on that stuff.
Right. Well, and every situation's different. You know, some people may have a great deal of flexibility in what they're doing and others won't. I suspect he had a great deal of flexibility. But if you're going to listen to somebody, one of the opinions that always seems to get, tossed back to engineers is one of two. You either hear from the marketing department who says this will or will not fly, or you hear from the customers. Oftentimes what you hear is marketing speaking on behalf of the customers.
Right. Oftentimes they say, we are the customers, we talk to them regularly, and we know exactly what they want.
Which I rarely believe, but...
And we should mention for any younger listeners out there, who are maybe getting into engineering or have just started engineering, that this will not be the last time that marketing is brought up in a positive or negative light on this podcast, because it's really just a reality of engineering. It's not a good thing or a bad thing. It's just a struggle that occurs in any kind of design situation. And there's different priorities and there's different outputs that you want.
Right. If engineering is the art of solving problems, you know, rocks and chairs don't have problems. It's people that have problems. And so at some point, you've got to have someone that's making the determination of what the problem is to be solved and how well you're solving it. And in often cases, that's marketing, whose job it is to make those interpretations.
Right. And that often, without that, you can't make money. So God bless them for that one. got to make some dough somehow.
Right. Right. So if, Chris, if people come back and say, okay, you know, here's your project, here's your system, here's your design, and we've got some marketing input, some customer input, you know, what do you do with it?
Well, that depends. Where am I, just at the jumping off point, like we talked about last week?
Well, sure. Take it from any point you like.
I think if you're at the, you know, if you're at the beginning of a project, I mean, that you're right, that happens a lot, and it could happen at any point in your project. And in fact, it's much more likely, it always feels like it happens at the end of a project, right? You've got this great product.
Right.
And here comes the flood of requests. So in that case, it depends. If you got a lot more money and time to burn, yeah, you can turn around and add some features and add in new functionality. Sometimes you can't do that, though. If you're at the beginning of everything, maybe you just roll it into your concept. So if you have 10 different groups of people telling you they want 10 different things, maybe you roll that into your design presentation when, oh, I'm designing this now. So this is a, you know, there's not necessarily any realistic inputs. You don't know if it's possible to build that. You're just designing it. You're just creating out of some requirements. I mean, maybe not even requirements, but a wish list.
Right. So there's a bit of a difference between a sort of the conceptual design when you're just trying to see what's possible, and, you know, more product design when you're trying to firm up a product that's actually going to ship.
And you had something here about Dan Saffer. How to lie with design thinking. Perhaps the earliest project schedules, if you're before you're even conceptualizing a product, you're just dreaming and pulling in all these what ifs and could be's and wish lists.
Right. So oftentimes the feedback will come initially from marketing or someone representing marketing. Who may or may not have actual contact with the customer, but they will claim to have contact with the customer. And they will come back and they will say quite reasonably, the customer tells us that we want feature A and we don't want feature B, and the cost should be C and the response time should be D, you know, whatever the set might be. And unfortunately, if you deliver exactly what the customer requests, you'll often find you've got a product that nobody wants. People tend to, you know, if you ask them what they want, they tend not often to actually describe what it is they will buy, because they haven't really thought about the problem it is they're trying to solve. And so one of the ways of getting around that, one of the sort of, at least in the past, I'm not sure exactly how hip it is these days, you know, how much buzz it has going on, but for a long time, one of the hot topics was design thinking, which came out of some work at Stanford. I think I know it had many starts, but I'm familiar with David Kelly at Stanford starting that, and he started a company named IDEO, and they did some work for Apple with their, I think they're involved in one of the mouse designs, the early mouse designs, and have done work for them. And
IDEO is quoted almost consistently in design type of materials, and a lot of time boxing and a lot of other concepts.
Yeah, they're almost synonymous with design thinking. They've from a marketing standpoint, they've positioned themselves in the market beautifully. So one of the things about design thinking, I mean, my takeaway from it is I look at all this write-up about design thinking and I go, what's the big deal? I mean, you're trying to solve the problem and you find what problem the customer is actually having. But they make an effort to talk about trying to, in addition to talking with the user, trying to empathize with the user, spending a lot of time observing the user to see what their actual problems are. A lot of times the problems are something that the user just doesn't recognize on their own. And so that seems kind of intuitive to me, but I guess it's not intuitive to everybody. And so this is the whole, you know, design thinking, and you can go to the IDEO site and you can buy books on design thinking. And there's all kinds of literature out there about how that should be revolutionizing not only design work, but, you know, how businesses run themselves.
So how is it possible to lie with it then?
So it depends on which article you're reading as to what's going on. You see articles that talk about it as almost a silver bullet, that you do this design thinking, that you get into the needs of the customers and you empathize, and you have certain exercises that allow you to uncover the problems of the user, and that will solve all your product design problems. And I think that's like all, you know, programs, that's sort of a simplification of what actually happens. In this video presentation that Dan Saffer had about how to lie with design thinking, he basically makes fun of sort of these ideas about empathizing, and basically says it's a way to avoid having to do any work. You spend all your time doing neat presentations, using all the design thinking jargon, and you don't have to bother getting your hands dirty and actually doing anything. So I don't think he's actually saying that design thinking is without merit. He's just making fun of the over-reliance and over-promotion of design thinking as a magical way of solving problems.
So that kind of reminds me of a different methodology that I know about.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds similar, actually, to design thinking.
Okay.
Voice of the customer is another one that I've heard of. And both in design thinking and...
You mean marketing is actually going to allow the customer to speak for themselves?
Apparently, yeah.
Okay.
We shouldn't get too snarky here, Jack.
But all right, I'll try to
restrain myself. In this case, I'll let that one. I'll let that one fly.
Okay.
The important thing about it, though, is... Both this and design, both voice of the customer and design thinking seem to have a common theme, and almost like a Goldilocks theme of too much feedback. In voice of the customer, what you do is you go out and you talk to a customer and you say, what do you need? You know, like what do you need from this product we're going to design for you, this nebulous product? And then you listen, you sit there and you listen to them, and they tell you everything they'd love and everything they want in a product.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And in general, I think that could be good, because a lot of engineers, you know, if you're going out and you're talking to engineers, if your product customer is engineers, a lot of times they know what they want.
Right.
But other times you get people saying, well, I have this product that does 10 widgets a minute. And I'd like a product that does 11 widgets per minute.
Right. Turn it up to 11.
Turn it up to 11. That's right. And I don't really agree with that, I have to say. I think that's a little too much feedback and kind of not directed in the right direction. Personally, I don't know if you've seen that similar kind of thing. Obviously, you've seen design thinking, but...
You'll tend to get incremental thinking. You're not going to get a breakthrough product because people tend to, I mean, everybody's different, but most people tend to be able to only envision things that are similar to what they already know. So if the dial goes to 10, making it go to 11 isn't too radical a concept.
Right. Then there's that XKCD comic about that. The dial goes from 10 to 11.
Right.
And then I think the engineer says, the best engineer says, how much will you pay me to turn it up to 12 or something like that? that's great.
More incremental thinking.
That's right. Well, than charging for it.
Right. Right. Now, are you familiar with QFD, quality function deployment?
I am not. What is that? It's
another method where you're basically going through and trying to determine what parts of a product or a service mean the most to the user, to the customer. Let me see here. Using my favorite quick tool, Wikipedia, quality function deployment is a method to transform user demands into design quality, to deploy the functions forming quality, and to deploy methods for achieving the design quality into subsystems and component parts. My God.
That sounds terrible.
And ultimately to specify to specific elements of the manufacturing process. Yeah, but it has lots of neat charts. So.
Oh, yeah. So is that another function of too much feedback? Too little? Just right?
I think that's probably more appropriate when you've got a more defined product. You're trying to tweak the product. It's not going to help you much when you're trying to do a conceptual design.
Mm.
You know, if you're trying to figure out what goes next beyond the tablet PC, well now, that's wide open, whether it'll be, Google Glasses or it's going to be some sort of watch device or, who knows what's going to be beyond the tablet PC. That's a different bit of thinking than, say, what Apple did, where they said, hey, the tablet PC is already defined. We know what the concept is. Now we just need to refine it and make the user experience better.
Mm. In the cases of those revolutionary thinking, I mean, is that when you have to be, you just listed Apple, but Wozniak isn't there anymore, obviously. But is that the case when you do need to be the designer, the evil genius, the locked in the closet, working with test tubes kind of engineer?
So it depends on what you're trying to do. If you're trying to, if you're doing fashion design, most engineers wouldn't be, but if you're doing fashion design, that's a different, you've got to be at times shocking and out there. If you're doing, op amp design, probably, there's a limit to how out there you can be. You can improve performance, but the general concept of the op amp is well defined, and you're just not going to do, if you mess with it too much, no one's going to understand how to apply it. So,
guys, what if instead of silicon, we use peanut butter?
Edible op amps.
We just made $1 million.
I think there's. Wow, man, that felt good. Can we get Facebook to buy us? Okay.
I like that idea. Maybe we can go over the too little feedback kind of situation. I mean, there are situations where this has happened before, right? Where it's been closed off, the design has never seen the light of day, people push it out into the world, and their peanut butter op amp shows up in a press release, and everyone goes, huh?
Right. Right. Well, let me sort of set this in a larger context, I guess is the word I'm looking for. So when you get feedback from, whether it be your boss or your customer or the user or whatever, the first thing to realize is you got to sort of take this with a grain of salt. These people have different backgrounds, different opinions. And so just because one person who happens to be your boss or your customer has a negative opinion as to what you've done, it may be valid, but that doesn't mean that's the only opinion. You just look out at the opinion that people have about the current U.S. economy, and you've got people saying it's getting ready to roar back and to recover, and you've got people saying it's going to just tread water for a while, and you've got people that are saying it's getting ready to tank again. Lots of smart people with lots of different opinions. So I'd say don't get too bent out of shape. Don't get too high. Don't get too low. If you get whether you get praised or you get berated for what you've done. Obviously if someone is scolding you, you got to think about whether that's legitimate criticism or not, but you know, this is just a job. You know, it's not, you know, turn to your family, turn to your friends if you need, you know, emotional support, but work is not the place to turn for that kind of guidance and that kind of handholding.
Right. Yeah. Your customer is not necessarily your friend. They can be helpful, but they're not going to kiss your boo-boo if you fall down. Right.
And 40 years ago, you know, you hired into a company and you could expect that company would keep you as an employee for a lifetime. You know, that's obviously not the case anymore. So, unfortunately, when things get bad, they're going to say it's just business, and they're going to say bye-bye and walk you to the door. That's not a good thing, but that is just the way the world is these days.
You heard it here first, folks. Jeff Shelton says, trust nobody.
I'm not saying trust nobody. I'm just saying take everything with a grain of salt. You know, don't, you know, keep an even keel. You know, don't get too high, don't get too low.
Engineering is business as well. That's kind of the idea behind it, right?
Engineering is business. You know, you got to, even if you got into engineering because you love it, that's fine. But the engineering is the doing. It's not other people's opinion of what you're doing. So, you know, once again, you have to take that as, you know, if people criticize, you've got to think about whether it's legitimate or not. But just because they say it doesn't mean it that it is absolutely legitimate. So in this feedback, so let's say that you throw something out and you know, you get this feedback. You may get feedback that says, you know, what you've done is great or it's good.
So let's say we put a podcast episode out and people said, yeah, we like that. That's not bad.
Right. So if they say it's great, it's fabulous, or it's just awful, I take those particularly with a large dose of salt.
Yeah.
If they say it's great, it may be that they really enjoyed it, or they liked what you've done, but it could also be, I've had cases where bosses basically said, I'm sure it's great, or I didn't have time to look. Basically, they're saying, I don't care at this point. You know, I'm sure it will be fine, but they haven't really gotten into the details. They're simply passing along the opinions of others. They say it looks good, but that's not their opinion. That's just they've heard from somebody else that it was good, and so they're just passing that along.
I'm trying to refactor how I frame this now. I'm thinking in my head, oh God, everybody thinks that we're saying this about the podcast now, but we're actually talking about an engineering job, right? So,
right.
So I design a circuit, you design a fixture, something like that. And they say, okay, yeah, it's good. Get out of here.
Right. And so also, if somebody says it's great, they may be also in that state of that happiness state we talked about last time. And they may be still in a state of hoping for perfection. They don't want to admit to themselves that there are problems. So they'll just keep pretending that it's great, hoping that it's at some point it will become great.
Interesting. What's the takeaway from that then? Feedback in general. I mean, okay, so... Any feedback involving people has a human component to it, basically. That's kind of the idea behind that, right?
Absolutely. So if someone says it's good or fair or poor, I'm more likely to take that as put greater weight on it just because it's sort of it's telling me it's great is good, but that doesn't necessarily help me improve it. Mm. If there are no faults, how do I know where to improve it? On the other hand, if somebody says something is just absolutely awful, it just stinks, then you've got some really fundamental problems. Either there was, you know, a serious misunderstanding of what was expected, or the technology isn't there, or you know, something has gone seriously wrong.
Or there's an agenda behind it all in the first place, which is...
Or there's an agenda behind it.
Another human component, which you hope is never the case, but it does happen.
Right. So I will offer again, since last week I offered, or last podcast, I offered the magic pi rule for multiplying things, for multiplying time estimates. I'm going to offer
another multiplier.
Rule of thumb. Yeah. This is the 45-minute rule.
Okay.
Now, this is when things go badly. When,
how bad?
You know, things are going bad.
Bad?
When people are ready to scream bad.
Oh.
When they tell, they invite you into the conference room and say, they close the door behind, you hear that click, and you go, oh, this is not going to be good.
No. Getting shanghaied, which has many meetings these days, but back in the day, actually, yeah. Do you know where that comes from?
I do not.
Getting shanghaied is when they used to get sailors drunk, or longshoremen drunk, like the guys that worked on docks.
Right.
Either sailors or longshoremen.
Right.
They'd get them drunk, and then the sailors would pass out. They'd push them through a trap door in the bar and put them on a boat, and basically they were stuck on a, because it's such a long boat trip on the way to Shanghai,
right,
that they were stuck there, and so they figured they'd work, and that's getting shanghaied.
Well, if you've ever been in one of those meetings,
you don't get drunk very often.
You don't get drunk, but boy, it feels like a long boat ride.
It does feel like a long boat ride. Yeah, that's right.
The good news is, if they're going to fire you, it normally happens fairly quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If they're not going to fire you, pretty much after 45 minutes, they've exhausted themselves. They are. I've never found anybody that can go longer than 45 minutes without becoming emotionally spent. Now, I don't want to say that as though I've been through so many of these meetings that I know exactly how long somebody can survive, but I've been through a few of them.
Let me tell you how many people I've made mad.
And generally after about 45 minutes, if they came to vent, they're done venting. And at that point you can take a breath and you can say, okay, I admit that we made if it is a mistake that you've made, and in most cases it was a mistake that I had made, I apologize. Here's where we are. What do we need to do to move forward? And so if you're in the first 15 minutes of one of those meetings, just, you know, take a quick look at the watch, know that half an hour remains, and hold on for the ride.
That's right. Start thinking about what you're going to say when they stop yelling. So is that too much feedback again, or is that the right amount of feedback?
If you've done something wrong, that's the right amount of feedback. I mean, people have a right to complain if they don't think that you're headed in the right direction. Mm. But sometimes you get no feedback.
No feedback.
So basically what I've said, whether you're getting great feedback, good, fair, poor, or awful, you're getting feedback in some, you know, nominal amount, you know, it seems appropriate. Now, sometimes there are two other types of feedback I want to mention. One is when you get no feedback.
That's just crickets.
Yeah, and that's not good. If you're looking for an audience, you know, we talked last time about the lean startup, and you find the minimal viable product and toss it out there. If you throw your MVP out there and no one responds, well, you have no audience.
Right, there's nothing to pivot on at that point. There's nothing. There is no P. There's just M. Yeah, there's no MV because there's no P. Yeah,
right. But if you're in an organization, that is, you've been asked to do something and you throw it back and say, okay, here's the, what I've done, and you get no response, that's not good. It generally means that either no one cares, or you basically they've passed the problem to you and you're on your own. You know, you've got no buy-in from your managers, or somewhere, you know, wherever else in the organization you're looking for support. And that's a time to think about, you know, you need to go back and ask, you know, exactly why is it that I'm doing this, and what is it that's supposed to get done? So the other feedback I wanted to mention was what I call delayed feedback. And this is the worst kind of feedback.
Oh, I think I can guess this.
Okay, go ahead.
Is that when you get the no feedback and then you keep going anyways?
Yeah.
And then you push out a product or some kind of output, a report, whatever it's going to be if you're in a big company. And then they say, oh, we never wanted you to do that. And by the way, it stinks.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, it's like you've read my note here in front of me. No feedback until after things go wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's when they say, then they also add in, and we told you so.
Right.
Yeah. Backwards looking.
And sometimes if you end up in a managerial role, you can see where this is easy to do sometimes, because if somebody is messing up and not doing their job or not doing it to your satisfaction, you think, well, I'll be kind and I won't mention it. I don't want to make them feel uncomfortable. But the problem is, if things don't correct themselves, then all of a sudden you're 6 weeks or 6 months or 6 years down the road and the problem is still happening. And now you're going to go back to this person and say, hey, for the last 6 weeks or months or years, you've been screwing up. Well, this is way too late to be informing somebody that they've got a problem. And so you understand how managers would do that. They're trying to be kind, but they're doing nobody any favors by not giving honest feedback.
Right. That's the engineering component running into the human component once again. Not that they're totally right. Separate. I'm not saying engineers aren't human people, but but yeah, that is a tough situation. I mean, it's when you try and shelter people from the business side of it. And I'd just like to point out, no one ever says it's just engineering, you know? There's no negative connotation, but when you say it's just business, it means you're not being nice. So right. I'm just saying, plus one for engineering on that one.
Right.
It's just engineering, Jeff. Oh, I had to optimize it.
Right. So I will just offer sort of wrap up this portion of the feedback theme. If you're ending up in these situations where you're getting, you know, you've either getting awful feedback, you know, things are really going wrong, or you're getting no feedback, you're getting delayed feedback, that's an indication that you need to be asking questions up front. You know, things are just not specified clearly enough up front. You know, if it's awful, maybe you need help with the technology. One of the spots where I got really chewed on early on in my career was I had left a job at a machine shop. I'd gone out on my own, was doing design work, and was starting to use AutoCAD because I could get AutoCAD cheap and had never used that CAD package before. And so I was learning how to use AutoCAD, but had not really completely learned how to correctly make all the endpoints snap together. I was getting close, and from a zoomed out far enough, it all looked like it was coming together fairly well.
Yeah, hold up the thumb, kind of squint your eyes, and you look at it. Like, yeah.
Yeah. And so I was laying this part out, and it looked like it was going together okay. And I was in a, they were in a time crunch, and I was kind of in a hurry trying to get the thing done. And so I handed it back to them. And this was actually for the company that I had left. So I knew these people, some of them had worked for me. And they came back and said, this is absolute crap. This is horrible.
Huh.
And there were a couple of issues. One is I had given it to them to take a look at, and instead of reviewing it and sending it back to me and giving me feedback, they threw it into the shop and started production. They started manufacturing.
Oh my. So that's a no feedback situation.
Yeah. And because I didn't know how to correctly make all the inlines snap together, cause I hadn't used AutoCAD before, and this was my problem, not theirs. Everything was off, you know, every hole location was off, you know, 3,000ths or 6,000ths or 10,000ths, you know, not enough to really see at a high level, but it was off. And so it managed to irritate not only the guys who had to manage the job, but the guys out in the shop who said, Jeff has no clue what he's doing. And this was hard to take, given that this was a job for, you know, people that I'd previously worked for. So if at all possible, you want to sort of iron these issues out up front. I think if I'd known I had this problem with the endpoints not snapping together, I would have asked the question, but I didn't. I wasn't aware there's a problem, and I let it go on too long.
All right. No, that sounds very, very common.
So in general, I just say, you know, ask the questions up front, asking, you know, what does a successful project look like? You know, how will our progress be evaluated? What milestones do you propose for, you know, reviewing progress? Try to get as many of the details ironed out up front, because it gets much messier the later in the project that you go.
Right. But also with the understanding that no matter how much you iron a detail, it'll still have a wrinkle in it a couple places, and be prepared for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's actually one of the situations I ran into with actually my first consulting job. It's a couple years ago now. But we had a very well laid out spec. I mean, it was very, very definitive. Here's what we needed. This is for a power supply board I was working on.
Right.
And it got to the point where, yeah, I guess it was the same kind of point as you. I mean, it was the same. It was when we're actually getting from the design phase to the making it phase, which is a key transition.
Right.
And there had been no feedback previously because we did so much upfront design work based on assumptions we had that we didn't quite we didn't quite iron it all out. And then finally you get this hardware in and you say, oh, I guess we didn't know exactly all the constraints. You know, you always think that you have this, but unless you have that iterative feedback process where I was doing design, sending it to a cohort that I was working with, and he said, yeah, that looks about like what I think it's supposed to look like. And then there was no feedback at that point. I was an open loop system, really.
Right.
And at the end, it ended up being a scramble. I mean, that's kind of the story behind. I'm sure there's listeners out there right now just nodding their heads. You know, that scramble point that you can, you know, even when you're doing scheduling, you never have that plan in your schedule of the feedback point, the oh crap moment. You know, you don't ever put that in, and it just turns into late nights and bodged together solutions and unfortunately subpar products sometimes.
Yeah, well, that's why you need the pi multiplier up front to give yourself a little time.
There it is. So what does a perfect situation look like then in your mind? I mean, if there is the right amount of feedback, maybe your best product or your best project, Jeff, how did the feedback work in that situation?
The best projects for me have always been those where the sort of the scope of the problem is laid out. And I've got somebody on the inside who can be kind of an advisor on what might work or what might not work. So if I'm working with someone who's in machine design, who's a skilled designer, who has some experience with you know, either a line of products or a type of product or you know, can give me some advice on how out there I can go, then that's great. It gives me some faith that I can push the envelope a little bit because this person will help guide me to not do anything too stupid.
Yeah, reel you back in if you can really get out there.
But unfortunately, that's rare. It's getting rare. You just don't find guys who've been, you know, engineers have been hanging around with companies for 20 or 30 years.
Interesting.
So much. And so you're left with just, you're handed a set of drawings. In my case, you're handed a set of drawings and said, well, this is what we did the last time and improve on it.
Add some goodness.
Right.
That's what my coworker says. Needs more goodness.
Well, and so what about you, Chris? What kind of feedback do you like to receive? What kind of projects work well for you?
You know, lately I've been doing, I've been really getting in, obviously I don't do a lot of this, but I've been getting into 3D modeling and like even 3D printing. And I feel like that's like one of the best ways to get feedback, because I can even show someone drawings, and usually I'll get someone looking at, you know, like a 3D drawing I've done, which is to start with not a good drawing. I'm an electrical engineer. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just trying to get a concept out there. Right.
Right.
But I can show someone a drawing, and then always they'll stare at it with that glassy look in their eye, and then they'll cock their head and they say, oh, that's what that is. You know? And that's one thing. But the thing that I like about 3D printing is there is no better feedback than shoving something in someone's hand and saying, look at this. What don't you like about this? And then having the facility to go back and change something and try it again and do another print or however you want to do that iterative design process. I mean, it all comes down to iteration, because the feedback is built into an iterative cycle. You know, you try something, get some feedback, fix what you're doing, maybe add something else in if you've got a new idea.
Right.
So that's been the most recent example, and it's always tough getting that down to a low timeline, you know, like getting from the idea feedback back to the idea again, that's pretty difficult to do.
Right.
And these days, I think it's a lot easier these days, but I'm sure, you know, many years ago, it was basically an open loop system like we were talking about before. You know, it's like you're a designer or you're an engineer and you're Steve Wozniak and you make the, you start with the Apple One and
right.
push something out there. And in his case, it worked. But there's a lot of other people out there it didn't work for. You know, there's other computers that it just wasn't quite as good. And so it's kind of, if you have that, you know, feedback can be frustrating when there's marketing and there's customers yelling at you and there's bosses telling you to, you know, make the best product and the cheapest and everything. And that you have to listen to your customers and having to deal with all that. But on the other hand, that can be useful. I mean, sometimes it's like peeking at the answers, you know, like,
right.
So you really do, you have to balance that. I mean, that's the balancing act is getting, knowing when to use the right amount of feedback, using it quickly, using it up front, like you mentioned, and trying to roll it all in and get it all out the door on the time. I mean, and then, ta-da, that's engineering.
Well, the beauty of the 3D printing, obviously, is you can get prototypes turned around quickly and get people's opinion. I will warn you, however, that because the 3D modeling is tend to be, you know, mechanical in nature, that you're going to find yourself subject to the curse of the mechanical designer.
Oh yeah, what's that?
And that is, well, if someone looks at a software program, they don't normally go, "I think the guy used the wrong sort function," or you know, they look at an electrical, you know, electrical board. They don't know, normally, most people don't go, you know, "Oh, he used the wrong op amp in that circuit."
Well, you're not hanging out with the right electrical engineers, because I've heard that many times. But
well, that's somebody who can actually tell what's, you know,
gotcha.
the average person doesn't really know what's on the board. But I guarantee that everybody who has ever changed a spark plug thinks that they're a mechanical designer, and they will tell you how it should have been shaped differently, or built differently, or built cheaper, or built out of different material. So
the unwanted feedback, the whining or the whinging, if you're British.
Right. And that often is delayed feedback. You can't get anybody to say anything until the product is, you know, just on the on the edge of shipping, and at that point they suddenly come out and have just a slew of opinions about what you've done.
Or 10 years later. "You know what grinds my gears?" Yeah. That happens everywhere, but I mean, that's just that's the user side of things. I mean, you could try and roll that back in eventually, but man, talk about emotional baggage that comes with some feedback. I mean, "Well, I didn't like this piece of software because it broke my computer. Well, really, I spilled coffee on my computer, but, you know, I blame the software, so fix that."
Getting back to the, start to address feedback, and you mentioned it in terms of the podcast, and I was kind of off on a different tangent there for a bit. But we did get some nice feedback on the podcast. People generally seem to like it and think we're headed in the right direction. I didn't see anybody saying that we're completely headed in the wrong direction.
Our turd of an idea is doing good so far. So we
right.
should,
So despite my saying that great feedback was, you know, merely, you know, people who were not interested or passing along the opinions of others, I didn't mean to imply that we did not appreciate any of the positive feedback we got from listeners. And if they have ideas for the direction that they'd like this podcast series to go, then we're certainly open to hearing their thoughts.
And of course, we'll take it with many, many grains of salt, so...
Many, many grains of salt. That's right.
Yeah, buckets of salt, really. In the meantime, we should talk about another quick issue regarding the podcast.
Yeah.
A name. We should.
Oh, yeah.
So we've been discussing names.
Right.
We've had some good ones. Got some good suggestions out there. Some floaters.
Right. You completely shot down my attempt at a name.
I didn't shoot it down, per se. I mean... gently rebuffed it.
I was inspired by a scene from The Big Bang Theory, which they talked about the swirling vortex of entropy. So I was pitching vortex of entropy, but we decided that was a little too ambiguous.
We also didn't want to do the Wallowitz way. I mean, we in the same Big Bang Theory vein.
Right. So we got some names. I had a list here. We had Engineering Bay. We had Higher Plane, Engineering at Large, Jumping Off, View from Above, Enlightened Engineer.
Engineering Perspective, Dogma, Culture. Yeah, and we kind of came to one.
Okay, so Chris, what do you think that we should name this podcast?
Well, we were talking about the commonalities between you and I, and that's kind of what this whole thing's about, and the engineering lifestyle behind, you know, like how you can be an engineer, and there's similarities between it. So the thing we came up with was the Engineering right. Commons. And that's not bad, right?
I don't know. Is the domain name open?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had to check that.
Well, that's good. I propose that we go with the Engineering Commons then.
All right. And everyone is encouraged to give us feedback on that. And if they do have a different suggestion, they should send us $10 for a new domain name registration.
Very good. Very good. And if their feedback is awful, if they would just like to record that as a YouTube video, and I will just listen to everything after the 45th minute.
I like that. I like that. All right. Well, Jeff, another episode of the Engineering Commons in the can.
Terrific. Terrific.
Talk in a few weeks, I suppose.
I think so. I look forward to it.
All right.
Take care.
Bye.